Okay, how's it going? Let's get started. Let's go ahead and get started. So how's it going?
Awesome.
What's happening in 2 weeks? The official, final, formal presentation, right?
2 weeks away.
2 weeks away. So on that, we're going to have actually, for the first time, Senior Design 1 and Senior Design 2 on the same day. So your classes are going to be canceled for that day so that you can attend presentations. And you'll hear more about that shortly. Our presentations are going to start, we're probably going to be in 308, room 308, which is down that other corridor. And I think we'll... It's what?
I'm sorry, is that a Tuesday?
It's a Thursday. So we'll start at about 10:30. We'll do take a break for lunch and finish up in the afternoon.
Is that all classes are canceled?
All engineering classes are canceled.
Include nighttime?
No, not nighttime. So what are some of the things that need to be added to your presentation that aren't in them yet? More of the approach, right? I expect at the final presentation you're actually going to present an approach. Cost analysis, that's what we're going to talk, one of the things we'll talk about today. What else? What's the other thing we're going to talk about today?
Schedule.
So one of the things that I want to see in the presentation is your schedule for next semester. Not this semester, next semester. And we'll go through, we'll sort of work through some of that today. Other things. What about team members and responsibilities? We need to be very specific about how each student is going to contribute over over the course of both semesters, but particularly for next semester. And we're going to tie that to the schedule that we'll start to develop today. The presentations will be 15 minutes long, and then we'll have 15 minutes for question and answer, so we'll be on a half-hour block. I thought about making the presentations longer, but I think it's really better to keep them to about 15 minutes and allow more time for questions and answers. So... Okay, so that's going to happen on the 15th, which means we will not have class that week because the presentations will count for class that week. So we'll have one more lecture next week, and then we'll have your presentations. And next week I'm going to talk a little bit about testing, sort of what my expectations are for the test sections of your documents. And that's something you actually need to have a little bit more of in your final presentations, is how you're going to test that your system meets the design constraints. And we'll talk about what constitutes formal testing and things like that. So today I want to talk about two things, cost and scheduling. Now, one of the things you're going to learn as engineers is that this whole area called project management has really taken off in the last 10 or 15 years. You're going to meet people in your jobs at your companies whose primary function is to be a project manager. They may not even be an engineer. They may be a business person. But they will know all sorts of obscure things about project management stuff. In fact, you can be certified. There's various certifications you can get as project managers today. And some of your companies will send you to those courses to get certified. If you work in the government, and you want to work on certain types of projects, they'll require you to have certain levels of certification for project management. So that's one skill that many of you may be acquiring after, you know, you get out, you get your job, you think school is done, and then your company turns around in a year or two and says, we want you to go to project management school. Cost is the same way. I mean, cost, how does a company actually set a price for a product? Well, that's actually a very complicated process, and there's a lot of issues that go into that, but what we're going to do in senior design is really something very simple. So I don't want to give you a long, drawn-out lecture on engineering economics and all that, but I just wanted to kind of hit the basics today to give you some general ideas about how you can approximate the cost of your project and what are some of the things that go into that. And then we'll do that for a little bit, and then we'll do half the class on scheduling. Now, next semester, Senior Design 1 students are actually going to use Microsoft Project to do the scheduling. We didn't quite get there this semester, so we're not going to use that this semester. But next semester, people will learn how to use a formal project management tool known as Microsoft Project. And everyone will get a copy of that as part of this Microsoft licensing deal that we have now. But, that's another one of these little skills that many companies will want to know that you have, is to know that you've actually learned how to do project management inside of a tool like Microsoft Project. I thought I left the door open. So let's talk about cost. And I thought we'd do this in a more interactive way, so that will keep you all awake. Actually, we had a college seminar yesterday on teaching and learning and all that kind of stuff, and they keep talking about how we're supposed to make the classes interactive. So here's your chance. So let's talk about cost. One of the reasons I like talking about cost is because I've encountered a lot of students who want to start businesses, and they have some great idea, like, you know, we're going to manufacture iPods out of my garage, right? And a lot of businesses do actually start as family-run businesses, literally pooling money from members of your family, which is a really dangerous thing to do. But it's always interesting to me that people don't really understand the cost of doing business. And that's probably a good thing, because I think a lot of companies would never get started if people really understood what the cost of business really is. When you talk about startup companies, what's one of the major reasons startup companies go out of business? They don't have a business plan. Usually they don't get funded if they don't have a business plan. But not having a good, a clear business plan is certainly true. What aspect of the business plan is usually their weak spot?
The financial.
What aspect of the financial?
So planning out what their cost is going to be, what they're spending. They don't use the account for everything necessary.
Like so what happens? They don't turn profit. They overexpend. So what sort of happens in the course of the lifetime of the startup company? Why does it fail? Why do they fall in debt?
Because spending is more than income, or what the revenue.
Most businesses are like that at the beginning, usually in the red starting out.
So one of the interesting things about startups is a lot of startup companies actually have really good product ideas, but what happens is they run out of money before they reach some kind of steady state on their revenue stream. And very often, that happens because of success. They create the concept, they get a few companies to actually pay them up front to develop this thing that they've never seen before, and that kind of gets your working capital going. But then they start actually getting orders for more of these products, and they're not yet ready to produce those products. So they have to ramp up manufacturing without revenue. And what happens is, as Brandy was saying, your expenses start to exceed your revenue, and you run out of money, even though you actually have people willing to pay for your product. You just can't survive long enough to get to the point where you're able to produce enough products to sort of be profitable. And part of the reason for that is that startup companies, it's very hard, and it's a big challenge to try to figure out what are all the costs associated with your product. For example, there's a lot of products you can build that would be really neat products, but the cost of manufacturing those products is excessive. Right, there's a lot of natural resources you can mine. Did anyone attend the Marcellus Shale workshop? I think you were there for a little bit of it. You know, this is a classic case of there's different ways they can recover natural gas from the shale. Some are really inexpensive and environmentally disastrous. Some are environmentally friendly but really expensive. And they're trying to figure out what's the right operating point in this space. And it somewhat depends on what the price of natural gas is in the open market. So facing these kinds of issues is a real challenge. When you want to sell, a lot of what I'm going to say today is going to sort of focus on consumer products because I think these are nice, easy stories to tell. But the nature of expenses associated with the product, of course, vary considerably. But let's talk a little bit about making sort of consumer products. So what are some of your favorite consumer products? Let's pick maybe two or three and we could compare and contrast these.
Xbox.
Okay, Xbox is good. That's a good example. We can have some fun with what it costs to sell an Xbox.
iPhone?
iPhone's a good example. iPhone and Xbox are very similar types of products. Give me something from a completely different market sector.
Refrigerator.
Bread is a good one because bread, you have a shelf life of the product kind of issue. Refrigerators are good. What about products that whose price does not necessarily reflect the cost of the raw materials? What? Software is an interesting one.
Clothing.
Clothing is more what I was thinking. Clothing and cosmetics are always a good one to deal with as a contrast to electronics. Because when you talk about something like cosmetics, what drives the cost of cosmetics? When you sell a product like makeup or nail polish or whatever, what's the largest component of the cost of that product?
Advertising.
Products like that are very, like 80% of the cost is advertising. That's, I mean, some number I've heard. Whereas when you talk about electronics, what are some of the big challenges if you want to be in the electronics business? There's sort of two really big challenges in the electronics business. If you want to build Xboxes, you're just going to build Xboxes out of your garage?
You got to have good connections with like the people that make the chips and the processors.
So highly sophisticated manufacturing process, which means what in terms of revenues? If you're in a business that requires, when you want to build, when Intel builds a microprocessor, I used to work at Texas Instruments, when TI would build a new memory that you all would love to buy for like a dollar or something, what do you think the cost of the manufacturing plant was to produce that memory?
$1 million.
$1 million?
$2 million. $50 million.
How many people believe that? The last fab that Texas Instruments built when I was there was $1 billion.
That's close.
Yeah, if you would have, for an hour, just kept escalating your price, you'd get there, right? $1 billion to build a chip that costs a dollar. How many of those chips do you have to sell to recover your $1 billion? No, not well, we're going to get into that. Not just $1 billion, unfortunately. Another interesting thing I found about the semiconductor business was when you looked at TI's revenues in those days were like $16 billion a year. What do you think our profits were? Profits were, if we were lucky, a couple $100 million. Now, if you were an investor, what would you think about that? Why? Very good, actually. You all get this. Very good. Why? If I came to you and said, give me $16 billion and I'll return $200 million a year back to you.
Because the ratio was crazy.
better off putting half of it on black.
What? Well, no, much safer than that.
It's the amount. You know, like if it was $16, I'm like, here, have it. But then for $16.
So what would you rather do with your $16 billion? Even with interest rates what they are today? Just put it in a bank, right? You put the $16 billion in a bank, you get 5% interest. That's like, you know, what, $800 million. Why should I risk it on this crazy guy who's going to build this company and claim he's going to make 1% profit? Now, what's the other problem with electronics? High initial in cost, but there's another interesting problem about the electronics market. The electronics market has been compared to the automotive market. And I love these comparisons because they say what kinds of things?
It's obsolete before it's...
They say if... No, they say that if cars were priced the way electronics is priced, what would be the cost of a car today?
$4,000.
Pennies. If you look at where cars were in the 1940s, and you look at where electronics were in the 1940s, and then you look at how these have advanced, even if you just take the last 20 years, and you look at how these have advanced over the next 30, 40 years, and you look at the effective price that they cost, think of how much computer memory could you buy in the 1940s?
1 gigabyte.
Like bits, right? How much computer memory can you buy today? You know, gigabytes, petabytes, for pennies, dollars. I have a terabyte disk for $100 on my desk. If cars had followed this kind of a path, cars would be very inexpensive. Cars have actually gotten more expensive every year for the same functionality. What is true about electronics when you're in the Xbox business, or you're in the iPod business, or you're in iPhone business? Well, what happens to your... If you just produce 1 gigabyte iPods for the next 10 years, what happens? It's obsolete. Every year you have to do more, generally for less, right? So electronics is interesting because you have really aggressive pricing structures. Now, when we talk about senior design and we talk about cost, like we have the water percolator project, very good project in terms of cost. We're concerned about what the cost of this product will be. We have some of the other projects dealing with the wind turbines and things. What are some of the things that go into the cost of your product?
Materials.
So the raw materials. Okay, labor and design. These are good. Tell me about labor. What kinds of labor are there?
Skilled labor.
Well, there's two types of labor, I think, relating to, you said design, I think. Did you?
R&D.
There's R&D. What other type of labor is there?
Manual.
Well, there's a labor associated with actually building the product, right? So there's labor costs associated with the actual manufacturing. Somebody had a good point. Labor associated with sales, right? There's sales. How are you going to sell your product? Are you going to hire a salesperson, pay them $100,000 a year, and tell them to go sell your product?
On commission.
Why on commission?
They're motivated.
So they're motivated. So how much commission are you going to give them? They're going to get a significant chunk of the revenue, right? What they're going to take if you're a real estate agent, for example, 6% of the price, the price of the house. If you're a technology salesman, in some instances, you may get 10% of the revenue.
She gets 30.
What?
She gets
30. 30?
Tanning lotion.
Hey, 30%. Very good. What else? What are some of the other costs?
shipping.
Shipping, very good. It's amazing to me how in today's world you can buy something on eBay and have it shipped to your house for less than what you can buy it on the shelves at a store. It just amazes me. I'm doing more and more online shopping every year because what eBay has done is just amazing, but it's really made it hard for retailers because you can buy almost the same thing from a retailer and have it delivered to your door. You don't have to do anything other than hit return. What else? But shipping is good because certain products, it makes sense. You know, if you're building things, you know, big things, like we were talking in one of our seniors' design meetings about the steel that they're buying for the building, the McGonagall building they're going to build on Broad Street. And, you know, if you're buying this kind of steel, a significant chunk of that is transportation costs. If you're selling microelectronics, you know, shipping costs are not so much. So that's something how you actually market and distribute your product is an interesting part of the costs. Other kinds of costs. There's some very important things that I haven't seen up here yet. Which give me, for example, what is one of the things that General Motors is struggling with right now that's a significant part of the cost of their cars? Pension. Thank you. Who said pension? And what's the other one?
Lawsuits.
We'll get to lawsuits. What else? Pension and what?
Insurance.
What kind of insurance?
Health.
What?
Health insurance.
Health
insurance.
Ah, we've got an entrepreneur here. One of the things I learned years ago was that if you have a company, if you have a small business and it starts growing, at what point do you transition typically from a small business to a large business in the eyes of the government? What? Revenue? No, in terms of number of employees.
Oh, 15, I think.
There's like two thresholds. There's when you're a small business, which usually I would say is maybe 100, 200 employees. But when you cross about 1,000 employees, the government starts to put all sorts of restrictions on you that require you to operate like a big business, essentially. So I remember a couple people who ran companies that crossed that threshold, and they used to tell me, you know, life was really fun until we crossed that threshold, and then we became the very kind of company we didn't want to be, because you have to do all sorts of things government wise. Well, one of the things are things like pensions and benefits and such. So I always love when it's senior design students used to talk about, we used to have at my former school a number of students that wanted to start businesses, and they talked about running these things out of their garage and getting it started with a few friends, but they never really talked about these kinds of costs. You may have, you know, you've probably read in the media that healthcare costs for General Motors was one of the things that was really weighing the company down, adding, you know, significant costs to their vehicles. Well, someone said lawsuits. Tell me about that. You've got to have insurance on top of insurance on top of insurance, right? So you have to worry about legal. Somebody's going to, this is what I find really discouraging, but no matter what business you're in, somebody's going to sue you within your first couple years of running a business. In fact, years ago, when I was doing some intellectual property stuff with Texas Instruments, TI had one of the largest intellectual property divisions in the world. It was generating $1 billion a year of revenue for the company. And one of their philosophies, like most big companies, is even if someone if a small company sues us because we infringed on their patent, no problem. We'll just keep them in court until they run out of money. So they, you know, big companies had no fear about patent infringement because they figured if it ever went to court, they could just keep that case in court until the small company ran out of money, which was literally true. So That's another thing that contributes to the cost. Other things. But the good news is I'm going to give you a very simple formula to distill all this. Because all these, of course, it could be very complicated to actually cost all these things out. What are some of the other things, other costs? There's one I see here which you haven't really, big one which you haven't thought about yet.
Wages.
What?
Wages.
Normal. Wages. Okay, very good. What was one of the things that triggered the economic problems a couple years ago?
Housing bubble.
What, you know, when the economy started its downturn prior to President Obama, when George Bush was still president, what was the thing they were pointing to that they thought triggered, kind of started to trigger the downturn?
The war.
Nope. How do you pay wages? So you open up your company, and a year from now you're going to start producing your first products, but you have to pay your people every week.
Loans,
thank you. So what triggered, what were they saying triggered the economy?
Defaulting.
Not defaulting.
Balloon.
When you're a company, what do you need to keep in business?
Money.
You need money. And where do you get money from?
Banks.
And other credit agencies. And what do you do in return for that money? They don't just give you the money.
Interest,
right? So they thought there was a credit credit crisis. What they originally thought triggered the bad economy was businesses couldn't get access to working capital. There was just the credit market dried up. Where does the money come from that businesses will borrow?
Banks.
Where do banks get their money?
Government.
No, not from the government. They get.
No,
the Federal Reserve backs the banks. Where do banks get their money?
From the people.
From you, right? The people.
We were putting our money in our meth business.
Oh yeah, everyone's taking money out of that.
When you put your hundred, you know, and I don't want to go too far into this. We have some courses that deal with this. But when you put your $100 in the bank, what happens to that? And how many times over do they invest that $100? More than you'd want to know. They take your $100 and they invest it here, then they claim to take the same $100 and invest it there. At any given moment, banks may only have about 5%. I don't know what the number is. It used to be, I think, like 5% of the cash. Cash on hand was only about 5% of all the loans that they actually had in operation. And who allowed them to do that? The Federal Reserve.
Are banks also allowed to, like, give out a loan for money they don't have, like a certain amount?
Yeah, all banks are insolvent. If you did a run on the bank, as they say, that would trigger an economic catastrophe because all these banks are, leveraged far beyond the actual cash assets that they have. Now, you might think this is not a big deal, but I actually had an interesting discussion with the controller of Texas Instruments one time, and he was talking about how they actually shop around the world for the cheapest money they can find. And, I mean, he was amazing. He was telling me about how they run 24 hours because when cheap money occurs in some part of the world, they jump on it. So he knew he could tell you where to go in the world to find all sorts of pockets of money and everything. And when you run a global business, that's what you have to do. So there are a lot of different kinds of costs, far more than we ever want to cover in here. So how do you price your product?
It's
Well, one of the ways you price your product is you look at what the competition's doing, right? So Xboxes looked at what Nintendo's were doing and all the other ones, and they all kind of played games on that. But there's generally, if you look across all these costs, there's really two types of costs. There's recurring and there's non-recurring. Recurring costs are a lot of the things we've written here. Non-recurring costs are the costs it takes to actually develop and kind of get your product out the door. Now, in terms of recurring costs, it's hard to predict. How do you recover your non-recurring costs? Are you going to, how, over what time period are you going to recover your non-recurring costs?
Years.
Typically years. And it depends on a lot of things like interest rates and things, but you may decide you want to recover your non-recurring costs over a period of 3 to 5 years. How do you recover your venture capital? When you get venture capital, that comes with strings attached, right? What are the strings attached? When you get that initial investment to start your company,
they can decide what you want to do with that business.
Why are the venture capitalists investing in you?
Because they think you want to make money.
Because they want to make money, right? So they don't have infinite patience in terms of return on their investment. And very often they'll dole out money in pieces. They'll say, here's an initial chunk, come back to us in a year, show us your progress, and we'll give you a second chunk. But at some point they want to recover their investment. And their investment doesn't mean in a given year, it means from the day they invested that money, the clock's ticking on 8% or 5% or 10% interest rate. Now, I'm sure some of you have done this with your school loans. You've taken out a loan at the beginning of your college education and watched it accumulate over the course of your college education. It gets scary when you see these things accumulating. So, in addition to the recurring costs, the non-recurring costs, that's sort of a chunk that you have to think about paying back over a certain period of time. Now, there's a very simple rule of thumb which I tend to like to use in senior design, which is your cost, your retail cost, is about 4 times the cost of materials. This is sort of the magic formula. And it varies from industry to industry and that kind of thing. But generally, what you're saying here is that the retail cost is about 25% of the cost of materials. I mean, it's about, the cost of materials is about 25% of the retail cost. Now, that gets interesting because if you talk about selling a $100 iPod, what are the cost of materials? And manufacturing, $25. Now, there's one little bit of caveat here. When you cost your design projects out, you do that in quantities, which means don't give me the price of buying one component from like a DigiKey or whoever. Price those components in the quantities that you would buy them from that company if you were mass producing this device. If you're planning to, and that's where the business plan comes in. If you're planning to sell 100,000 of these a year, you may be buying 100,000 of those components, and the price of each component will go down. Obviously, buying things in single quantity just doesn't work, and that's why many, many businesses, whether you're talking about the big manufacturing companies like the IBMs and Texas Instruments, or whether you're talking about the Walmarts, they pressure the suppliers to give them the best deals possible. And one of the things that gives corporations like Walmart a competitive advantage is they get people to supply them with stuff at a lower price than most other businesses do because they have this vast amount of purchasing power. And they make some companies go out of business. So this is what I'd like you to, for those of you who have these kinds of, are producing a product like the percolator, this is the way I'd like you to cost the product. 4 times the cost of material and materials in quantity. So when most of you have in mind a price here, we talk about, there's one of the projects that had the $500 cost. And was that the solar concentrator? So, you know, you back that up, $125. Now it becomes a little more challenging to design this thing. So what I would like to see in your presentation is some breakdown of the cost of materials. Show me a spreadsheet that shows me, you know, what the various parts are going to cost, and have that all add up to some number, and then you can apply this factor to get your retail cost. Yes?
With the percolator, it's supposed to be something that people build themselves, or aid agencies can build. So, and in developing nations, so the costs in, say, one country would be different than another country. And these are simple products like sand,
right,
you know, and or water bottles, you know, or Coke bottles that they're going to build it out of. So how do we do that?
Well, I think now you're talking more like a business plan. You have a strategy for how this is going to be produced, and you can talk about that. I think your project, you're right, that the cost of materials is probably the more critical thing, because you're planning really not to build a retail business around this. But there are other costs associated with this, and I'm still worried with the percolator about lawsuits. That's an interesting question. But that's actually true. Another reason you don't see a lot of lawsuits, especially from big companies, is they basically just wait around for small companies to get to a point where they're making enough money that it's worthwhile to go after them with a lawsuit. This happens time and again in high-tech industries. The small companies are blatantly violating patents left and right. They leave them alone. Let them get up to the point where they're generating $100 million in revenue, and then they go after them.
You read the SciStar versus Apple thing. Like SciStar started making Mac clones, like since when Apple switched to Intel processors, so they were hacking it, and they Apple sued the shit out of them.
Right, and there have been a few. Apple, in fact, was Xerox owned a lot of the patents that they claimed Apple violated. So Xerox let Apple grow to a point where it was worthwhile then to sue them. So Apple got hit several years after the Mac became a big success, because by then they were generating enough revenue that it made sense to go after them. But even there's always other organizations like environmental groups and things that could go after you with the percolator. You know, hopefully, well, you hope that if you're doing something for the good of society, you aren't going to get sued, but unfortunately.
We just claim.
And disclaimers don't always work. That's a whole other issue. Is there are some, I don't know if you've been following recently, a website I've been watching for a while is Yelp.com, which is a site where people can go and complain about things. They just got hit with a big lawsuit. And there's an art, you know, they had all the disclaimers on their site, but that didn't stop them from getting sued. And they're going to be in court big time over the next year because of that. Companies are suing them, claiming they're giving them bad press about their products and services. And you would say, well, that's kind of what Yelp is all about. They were started from the very beginning doing that. Why didn't they get sued? Well, because they're just waiting for them to become profitable enough that there was, because what the other companies who sue them want, they don't actually care what they're doing. They want a piece of their revenue. So if the other company wins the lawsuit, they'll eventually get a piece of their revenue. So then it's like you're giving away all your profits to some other company. But anyway, so that's a model for how you can cost out your products. Let's spend the rest of the time today talking a little bit about schedule. So I want you to build a spreadsheet that represents the schedule for your project in the second semester. Okay, so what I thought we'd do today is
summer, if we're planning on working in the summer.
No, I'll give you summer as free labor. But I do want the 15 weeks of spring semester, or 14 weeks laid out of fall semester. So what should we include in our schedule for the fall semester? So we're going to lay out a spreadsheet. Let's design that spreadsheet.
Week one.
What about week one?
It's
acclimated.
Well, what? How should we? What? Let's talk about the layout of the spreadsheet. What should go along the top? What should go along the vertical?
Tasks.
Tasks.
And time. Task time. Time is always X.
We have tasks. We have time. What else? I think we're missing something really big. Who's doing what? People, right? So we have people, we have tasks, and we have time.
Presentations.
Well, those would be part of the tasks. So how should we lay the spreadsheet out? What? Well, we want something like a Gantt chart, ultimately, right? But if this is going to be a schedule that's useful to you, what must this schedule do? In addition to tasks and time. Tasks and time are kind of obvious. Midterm presentation, final presentation. What? But what are some of your constraints? So you could give me a very detailed breakdown of you're going to build an iPod, and it's only going to take 3,000 hours of labor. What's the problem with that?
No.
So if you hand me a spreadsheet for the percolator that says this is going to take 14,000 hours of labor next semester, what's the problem with that? No. There's a fundamental problem with this. Come on. The number of people and? Okay, well, so four people divided by 14,000, that's only 3,000 hours a person? What? You only have a semester. So what's another key thing of this spreadsheet? It's actually why this is valuable, more valuable to you actually than it is to me. What must this spreadsheet do? You've got tasks. You have people. And this is the part that senior design students have trouble with. You have to figure out how much time it's going to take for each one of these tasks, how much time each of these people are going to spend on those tasks. Why?
So you can get done on time.
And?
In case you have problems. On schedule and on budget?
Do you have an infinite amount of labor hours?
No.
No. You have a fixed amount of labor hours. How many labor hours do you have? 15 weeks times 4 people times
a few hours a week.
A few? Tell me about that.
7 hours a week.
It's a 3-hour class. It's a 3-hour college class. 9 hours a week. So that's where it begins. What? 540? That doesn't sound like a whole lot, does it? It's not 13,000. So you're not... Exactly. So you're not going to be building an iPod, right? And that's one of the things that I find interesting about senior design is that students come with these really ambitious ideas, but they don't think about how much time that's going to take. And the worst thing in the world, what sucks about senior design is, unlike a company, if you fall behind schedule, you don't have the resources to go and hire 3 or 4 more people and speed up the project. Which is sometimes what you'll do in a company if you need to get back on schedule. So what I want to see for your project, I want to see tasks along the horizontal. I want to see people along the vertical. I want to see subtotals, because another game you have to play is for each person, these numbers have to add up. When I looked at responsibilities from the PDRs, I see certain people in the group associated with all these different tasks. Well, it obviously isn't fair if one person has 500 hours committed to the project and the others have less. And this is another interesting way that this has to be, you kind of have to balance tasks, is you've got to make sure that everybody's basically doing the same amount of work. Now, what's another constraint in this that isn't explicitly here? Time in what sense? That's very good, and that's actually why we use tools like Microsoft Project to identify all the dependencies and things. But even at a higher level than the sequencing of things, you have a few important deadlines, right? You have the midterm presentation, the final presentation, and you have the end of semester. So there's certain things, like the midterm presentation, that have to happen at a certain point in time. Now, what does that mean in terms of what you just described about sequencing of things? You have to somehow organize these tasks so that everything lines up, so that within the amount of time you have, things finish at the right points in time so that everything's ready. This will be your job as an engineer. This will be your job as a supervisor. Generally, when you become a manager or a project manager, this becomes your job. And believe me, it's not one of the fun jobs.
Corporations make it easier.
Oh, you've got to be kidding.
And my job is easy.
Because?
Because you almost duplicate some projects over and over, so you kind of know that it takes this amount of time. Means also helps you out determining what you're using in the man hours that you need. So you kind of got a guideline.
Yeah, I walked from being a professor, drove my car for 18 hours, walked into work the next day, was handed $10 million and told to deliver a product on this time, and I knew absolutely nothing about how the government actually does business. And I had to go through this, and it was a scary process. But we did deliver stuff on time. So you've got to kind of work it out, because there are some fixed points. You've got midterm presentation, you've got final presentation. Those should be explicit tasks. And the hours have to add up, because there's also time running through here. So if you're going to talk about, you know, so many work hours, generally the work hours will accumulate. But what's the key? What becomes the key to getting things done quickly? Not so much efficiency, but if this is totally sequential, person one finishes, person two works, person three works, person four works, what's going to happen? Not enough time. Not enough clock time. You will not end by the end of the semester. So what becomes critical in a high-performing team and a high-performing project? Doing things in parallel. And that's what a lot of teams are weak on in senior design. It takes some skill to learn that, but you have to figure out how people can get stuff done in parallel so that everything is not sequential. That's how you can take a sequential timeline and you can compress it in time by doing things in parallel. Now, how do you do things in parallel without, when they built the tunnel, you know, the European tunnel, right?
Dug from both sides.
They dug from both sides. And what was the big fear? That they wouldn't meet, right? How far off were they? It was actually the most accurate project ever done. Why?
They met.
They were still off, I understand, a little bit, like a few inches. But why? How did they maintain?
GPS.
They were actually had both of the drilling machines talking to each other in real time and constantly adjusting themselves so they arrived at the same point. What's the worst thing that could happen? This kind of thing. In which case, then, I guess you decide we're going to build two tunnels. So, how do you prevent that in engineering?
Communication.
When you do a collaborative project, when John is working on one thing and Mary is working on something else, how do you prevent that kind of mismatch?
Constantly talk to each other.
No. No. You see, you've missed everything I've taught you. What is the second section in your document? Design constraints. How do you make sure when people work in parallel they deliver the right things?
Design constraints.
You agree on the interfaces. You agree on the constraints. If I'm building, you know, my hole will be 3 inches wide. My peg will be 2.9 inches wide. So one of the things you have to do as you start laying this out is you need to make sure, if you just talk, I tell you what's going to happen. You're going to get in the meetings, well, I never said that. Or I don't remember. I've been kidding. In our college, we've had selective amnesia for the past couple of months. We've had a lot of contentious issues. And a lot of people are running around saying, well, I don't remember that. Nobody ever told me. And I go back to email and say, well, here's the email where you said that. That's one of the reasons why I love email. So, you need to work on your projects to make sure that as people are doing things in parallel, they're delivering things that are compatible. A simple example of that, when you're doing joint document development, I see people delivering stuff in different formats and then someone has to spend a lot of time merging that. Why? That doesn't make sense. That's inefficient. Have each person in the group developing the material to the specification so that you don't have to spend a lot of time merging the documents. When you go into your block diagram and you're developing these subsystems, this is one of the reasons I wanted you to make up block diagrams. You have to communicate about the interfaces of those systems so that the output of one fits into the input of the next. So that's the trick. When I look at a schedule, you want to see how much of it is being done in parallel. That's usually a good sign that they've done a good plan. But to do things in parallel requires a lot of planning and communication. And that's, again, typically where the project manager will be involved in setting deliverables and all that kind of thing and managing all that. So what I want to see here, you know, the bottom line is each person commits that number of hours per week to the project. So that gives you the total over here. All these tasks have to add up to that. Now, the worst thing in the world to do is to simply write out all your tasks, fudge all the data so that it all adds up, right? Which is what most of you will do. Another bad thing to do, and that's why in the second semester, I'll actually check this each week. You're going to report status in terms of where you are relative to these milestones. Because there's nothing worse than every week. Are you on schedule? Yes, we're on schedule, we're on schedule, we're on schedule. Then you get to the midterm, guess what? We don't have our system. Well, how? You just told me for the last 7 weeks you're on schedule. So tracking all this will be really important also, and that's again why we use project management tools for these kinds of things. So this will be a working document. Every week next semester, you're going to update this. But remember, when you fall behind, when one design task takes longer than it should have, what happens over here? Nothing, because this is a limit, right? You can decide to work overtime. That's one alternative. But generally, as things fall behind schedule, it's very hard to catch up. So this is, you know, I know this is one of the least enjoyable things about engineering, but unfortunately, this is one of the first things that you're going to do in your new jobs, because generally speaking, you have to account for your time in almost any engineering job. So, okay, is this clear? So cost and schedule. I want a cost spreadsheet and a schedule spreadsheet turned in next week. Okay. I will see you next week.
Joe, did you do the extra credit stuff this week?
I didn't do the extra credit stuff yet.
Okay.
I probably won't do it until the weekend. So just make sure everything's in sync. Yeah.
So, with our project, we're going to have to change the abstract, the design constraints. Because as of right now, I'm not even really sure what the scope of our project is.
I know, that was an interesting meeting.
It was a big blow to our project.
No, actually, it's great. I mean, I'm really excited about this.
I think it's good that.
I think that, so what I found interesting is, what I found interesting was Dr. Bufadel and Sandeep and I disagreed about things, but the way I see it is, your project was to sort of explore the feasibility of this thing, but now what's happened is the customers come in and said, okay, that's really nice and interesting, but these are the realities. So it's just sort of a detour.
So can we integrate that into our project and say, well, we looked at this?
And these are all the things we did. But now that it came time to make the decision, this is what was decided for a number of reasons. And now we're going to proceed with that. So I don't think you have to change too much then. But you just have to justify the fact that despite, and we still don't know really the difference between putting the turbines up here and putting the turbines over there.
So, but we do have to change, like, our design constraints and stuff, or no?
Well,
because our design constraints for over there will be different than what they will be up here.
I think that's, you can do it either way. I'm happy with you just proceeding the way you're doing for this building for this semester.
Okay.
And then for next semester, we can start revising things based on. But talk with Dr. Shah about that, I guess.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to see him this week. When is our?
I mean, we'll have our meeting on Wednesday. We can discuss this on Wednesday.
Okay. When's our revised abstract due?
It's not. I mean, I just wanted it on the website.
Oh, okay. You just want it on the website.
Yeah.
Okay. All
right. I have a question for you.
Sure.
Yeah, we wanted to ask you about our other group member. Is he gone now? Or
I mean, in my view, he's gone.
Like, that's what, I mean, we just never heard it officially. If he was.
Well, he never responded to my emails about that, but in my view, he's gone.
Okay.
So as far as presentation,
one of you will get the repeat. Yeah.
Okay,
it doesn't matter who.
Right. You have that. You have kind of that luxury.
We can outvote Colt. We got two.
He's doing the 2 week one and the final one.
Yeah.
So you have the one.
All right. Yeah. You
have to go until next September or October.
I forgot to upload our executive summary.
Okay.
Do you want us to do that still or hold off?
Yeah, no, do it to it and send me a note and I'll regrade it.
Okay.
But make sure it's in the design document. I forgot to mention that.
Right, yeah.
From now on, you should just be turning in the revised design document.
Right, okay.
Good.